Vasudevaya.
Om
Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, Divinity and Divine Service, Text number 30. Sa eva idam sasara jagre Bhagavan atma mayaya Sada sad rupaya chaso Guna maya guno vibhu Saha
that
eva
certainly
Idam,
this
Sasaraja,
created
Agre,
before
Bhagavan,
the personality of Godhead,
Atmamayaya,
by his personal potency,
Sat,
the cause,
Asat.
The effect.
Rupaya.
By forms.
Cha.
And.
Aso.
The same Lord.
Gunamaya.
In the modes of material nature.
Agunaha.
Transcendental.
Vibhu.
The absolute.
In the beginning of the material creation, that absolute personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, in his transcendental position, created the energies of cause and effect by his own internal energy. Purport. The position of the Lord is always transcendental because the causal and effectual energies required for the creation of the material world were also created by him. He is unaffected, therefore, by the qualities of the material modes. His existence, form, activities, and paraphernalia all existed before the material creation. There's a little asterisk here. Prabhupada places a little footnote. Sripad Sankaracharya, the head of the Mayavad school, accepts this transcendental position of Lord Krishna in his commentation on Bhagavad Gita. Then, Prabhupada says in italics, so this is important, he is all spiritual. You don't find italics very often in the Bhagavatam, in the purports. Except in the first canto. Maybe in the second. Maybe. He is all spiritual and has nothing to do with the qualities of the material world, which are qualitatively distinct from the spiritual qualities of the Lord. Om Agyana Timirandasya Agyana Anjana Salakaya Chakshurun Malitam Jena Tasmaya Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishnam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadanti Svapa Mukam Kuroti Vachalam Pangum Langaya Tegrim Yat Kripa Tamaham Mande Sri Gurum Jinitarayanam. So, the Bhagavatam begins with this recognition or statement. Acknowledgement. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Janmadyasya Yataha. Who is Vasudev? He is the source of everything. Janmadyasya Yataha. Everything comes from him. Janma means birth. So he's the source, the birth of the material creation. And Prabhupada is saying here, because he's the original cause, to substantiate this, we can quote Lord Brahma, Ishvaraha Parama Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha Nadi Adi Govinda Sahava Karana Karanam. He's the cause of everything. He's the beginning. He's the beginning. Adi means the original or the cause. Anadi, he himself has no cause. So he's the source of everything. And because he's the source of everything, that makes him Prabhupada says here, transcendental. Right? The position of the Lord is always transcendental because the causal and effectual energies here, sad asat, the cause and effect, are created by him. And you know, this is the first topic of the Bhagavatam. There are 10 topics in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and this is the first topic. Important. Where does everything come from? Where does everything come from? This is, it should be understood. If we were to know anything, we should know where we've come from. Shouldn't we? We should know where we are now, we should know where we've come from, and we should know where we're going. Unfortunately, most people don't. Well, they don't think about these things. So here the absolute position of Vasudev, or Krishna. Vasudev means the son of Vasudev, which means Krishna, ultimately. You know, the absolute position of God is established. And the relationship. Sambandha, basically. Sambandha Gyan. What is the relationship between God and the creation? Well, he's the source of it. Because he's the source of it, therefore he's the controller of it. As the controller, the Ishvara, the supreme controller, Paramishvara, he's the master. The master of everything, the master of everyone, the master of creation. Ultimately, the master of creation, maintenance and destruction. And as a result, then he is unaffected. Next line in the purport. He is unaffected. He's a controller of the energies. Parashya Shakti Vivataiva Sruyate Swabhaviki Jnana Bala Kriya Cha. Natatsamas, what is it? Natasya karyam karanam chavijyate natatsamascha adi, what is it, nadrisyate. This is verse that Prabhupada quotes all the time. Natasya karyam, he's got nothing to do. He doesn't have to work, in other words. You know, Prabhupada gives the example of the German philosopher. I think Prabhupada was my understanding is that Prabhupada was referring to his godbrother. He had a godbrother who came from Germany, and he said he made a study of the deities. He went to the different temples and saw the various deities, and he noticed that each one of them had some weapon or some implement. But then when he saw Krishna was playing his flute. He said, aha, he's the supreme. They're all working and he's just playing. Right? So Krishna doesn't have to do anything. Natasya karyam karanam jabijyate. That's a must. And there's no one equal to him. You know, we when we recite the ten offences, we say, you know, it's an offence to consider the demigods to be equal or independent. The demigods are powerful personalities. And that's why they're called demigods. Demi means like. So they are as powerful in some sense, in some aspects, they're as powerful as God, so therefore they're worshipable or respectable. They're empowered representatives of God, and so therefore they're given respect. But one shouldn't consider them to be equal to the original, the source, to Krishna. This is a mistake. Because we see, if we analyse the activities of the demigods, we see that they're still under the influence of the material energy to some degree or another. Whereas Krishna is always transcendental. Now, the interesting thing is, though, that if we look at Krishna's activities, then we find that he appears to behave just like an ordinary human being. This is part of the problem of understanding Krishna's supremacy, is that he behaves like a human. Manushim tanamasritaha. The foolish think that I have taken shelter of the human form. Avajananti mammuda. The foolish. Unintelligent, avajananti, those who have no knowledge, basically, do not know me. Because Krishna's activities sometimes are quite bewildering. He behaves just like an ordinary little boy. And not only just an ordinary little boy, but a very naughty little boy. Very naughty. This is Gopi Janavallabha. Gopi Janavallabha. He's very dear to the gopis, especially Yashoda and Rohini, who look after Krishna and Balaram. You know, when they're children, and their pastimes are very endearing and attractive. So it's hard for and we see with Lord, say, as even personalities like Lord Brahma, who knows his relationship with Krishna and acts in that relationship, serves in that relationship. You know, when Narada Muni approached Lord Brahma and was in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, Narada Muni approaches Lord Brahma and inquires from him about his role and his position and his relationship with Krishna. And Lord Brahma acknowledges that, you know, I'm the secondary creator. Before me is Vasudev. Narayana. In fact, yesterday, there were two verses. Interesting, now I think about it. There were two verses. Does anybody remember the verses from yesterday? Vasudeva para Veda, Vasudeva para Makha, Vasudeva para Yoga, Vasudeva para Kriyaha. Now, it's interesting. In the fifth chapter of the Bhagavatam, what does Lord Brahma say? Narayana para Veda. almost exactly the same verses. Deva Narayanangaja. Slightly different. Narayana Paraloka. That's not mentioned here. Narayana Paramaka. Okay. Vasudeva Paramaka. So Brahma is, you know, he's acknowledging more or less the same thing that Siddha Goswami is describing here. That I'm Narayana's servant. I'm Krishna's servant. Narayana Paro Yogo. Here, Vasudeva Para Yoga. Narayana Param Tapaha. Here, Vasudeva Param Tapaha. Narayana Param Jnanam. Vasudeva Param Jnanam. Narayana Paragati. Vasudeva Paragati. Same message. Lord Brahma acknowledges, I'm the secondary creator. I act as the servant of Narayana. So he understands his relationship with the Lord as a secondary creator of the whole, of the creation. Yet when he sees Krishna performing his childhood pastimes, he's bewildered. Now he's the, you know, the topmost personality in the material creation, practically speaking. Directly empowered by the Lord, the Lord also gives him inspiration. Tene Brahma Hrida Adi Kavaya, right? From within the heart. So he's such an exalted and elevated personality. And when he sees Krishna, when all of the, you know, the spiritual world and Krishna's pastimes are revealed to him, then he speaks the Brahma Samhita. Right? Govinda Madhi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. So it's not like Lord Brahma doesn't know who Krishna is. Yet when he sees Krishna performing his childhood pastimes, he's bewildered. He's bewildered. Because even though all of his activities are spiritual, as Prabhupada says here, he is all spiritual. There is nothing material about Krishna. Even though he manifests the material creation through a transformation of his energies, Parasya Shakti Vividaiva Sriyate. Parasya Shakti. His many potencies. And those potencies are transformed. So they are expansions of himself. And as a consequence, then he accepts the mode of passion and the mode of goodness and the mode of ignorance. The material qualities he accepts in one sense, or he creates them. But he remains unaffected by their influence. And there's basically one relationship that we can have with Krishna. Well, of course, there's more than one relationship. Maybe it's not correct to say there's only one relationship, but certainly we could say, and I will say, there is one relationship that we can have with Krishna. What's that relationship? Huh? Servant. Yes. Everybody is Krishna's servant. Krishna Das Kaviraj says this in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Ekale Ishvara Krishna. There is one Ishvara. That's Krishna. Arasava Britya. Everybody else is his servant. Right? So the material energy exists in relationship to Krishna as his servant. Just as we do. There's the spiritual, there's the antaranga shakti, the internal or spiritual potency, there's the bahiranga shakti, the external or material energy, and then there's the tatastha shakti, that's us, the marginal energy. We have, the living entities have the They're also servants. Right? Just as the material energy directly serves Krishna because it's under his control. Mama, Maya, right? What is it? Daivihi yesha gunamayi, Mama Maya. Duratchaya, very difficult to overcome. Actually, not difficult, impossible to overcome by one's own efforts, the material energy. Mameva ye prapadjante. However, and so we have a choice to serve, well, we're always serving Krishna, but we can serve directly or indirectly. So, you know, this relationship of service is important. The material energy has a purpose and serves the Lord's purpose. And, you know, Prabhupada explains that basically the material energy is a place for the rectification of those living entities, those jivas or those servants of the Lord who have forgotten their original relationship with Krishna and who are living in a state of illusion or bewilderment, thinking that they're the enjoyer. But they're separate from God, from Krishna. Separate and independent. So the material energy serves, always serves, just as we also always serve. That's our dharma, if you like, the intrinsic quality, the natural quality of the living entity is to be a servant. We're always serving someone or something at any particular time. We have the opportunity to serve Krishna directly, but we choose not to. It's choice. Independence. We have that minute independence. But when we exercise that minute independence, then we come under the influence of the material energy. That's what it's for. It gives us a sense of independence, but it's actually illusion. Whereas Krishna never comes under the influence of the material energy. He comes under the influence of his internal or spiritual energy, but not under the influence of the material energy. But the reason why Krishna's pastime is difficult to comprehend is because his spiritual activities appear to be like material activities. Right? You know, even there's those who say, oh yes, you who believe in God prescribe or ascribe human-like qualities. It's called anthropomorphism. We make God like us. Of course, that's around the wrong way. Even in the Bible, it says, man is made in the image of God. So we are, in the human form, God-like. Not that he's like us. This is a material conception. You know, the material conception is to make God like us, but then that's to limit him. Whereas, even though Krishna appears, and this is how we can know that he's God, he appears in his human form, but he also appears as a fish, as a boar, as a horse, as a swan, as a... And then in those forms, he performs uncommon, extraordinary activities that delineate, that differentiate him from just the ordinary materialistic person under the influence of the material creation. He's unaffected. And when he does appear, he appears in uncommon manifestations of what appear to be ordinary forms, but still the materialistic people then write those off as mythology or just imagination. But he is not. He is unaffected. and Prabhupada gives this example in the previous purport, even though he may appear in the material world, that doesn't mean he is of the material world. And the example that Prabhupada gives of the king going into the prison house. The king may appear in the prison, but just because he's in the prison doesn't mean that he's in jail. He says to the jail keeper, okay, open up the door, let me in. And he can actually let everybody out if he wants, because he's the king. And in fact, that's Krishna's purpose. Krishna's purpose in entering into the material world is to get everybody out, to attract everybody out of the material creation by his uncommon spiritual exploits, spiritual activities. But the materialistic mentality wants to equate God with themselves, because he appears in a human form, then they want to minimize or deprecate, depreciate his activities and minimize them and make them ordinary, or just a powerful person, Prabhupada says. And it's difficult to understand or appreciate that Krishna is not part of the material world, not subjected to the laws of material creation. Because he appears to be born, he appears to leave the world, it requires some devotion. Bhaktya mama vijanati. One requires devotion in order to appreciate or see and understand Krishna's energies at work. The activities of the material creation are the external or material energy, the Bahiranga Shakti, the external potency. But when, and ultimately that external potency is a transformation of his original spiritual potency. When Krishna performs his pastimes, he does so under the influence of the spiritual energy. Looks like it's the same as the material energy, but actually it's not. You know, Prabhupada gives the example of electricity. Electricity can be used to drive a heater, so you get heat, or you can turn on a refrigerator to get cold. So the same potency, but used for different purposes, all under Krishna's control. But the internal or the spiritual potency is very powerful because Krishna allows it to control him. His internal energy controls him. So that it appears that even he's, bewildered sometimes. He's the supreme controller, yet he chooses to be controlled by the love and affection of his devotees, of his mother, for example. You know, he's the supreme powerful, the unconquerable, the supreme controller. Yet when his mother picks up a stick and runs after him, he gets scared and he runs off. Mm-hmm. Especially because he's being very naughty. The residents of Vrindavan complained to Mother Yashoda about Krishna's stealing. You know, here's the controller, the maintainer, the creator, the source of everything. In other words, he has everything. He controls everything, yet he's behaving as if he's impoverished. And he has to go and steal. The Mother Yashoda said to the gopis, you know, if why don't you just give him the butter and the yogurt and then he won't steal. And they said, no, he won't eat anything unless it's been stolen. He only likes to receive stolen goods. And if he can't steal something, if he can't find anything to steal, then he gets upset and he goes and pees on the floor or pinches the babies. So here's the supreme controller behaving like a naughty boy. When the cowherd men say, you're a thief, he says, no, you're a thief. Just like a baby, you know, just like a little child, you're a thief. You can see that when Sanjita, Radha Krishna's daughter, if you tell her off, you're naughty, no, you're naughty. So, Krishna's the supreme controller, yet he accepts the control, or he accepts the chastisement even of his devotees. So when Mother Yashoda found, you know, caught him breaking the yogurt pot after she... Mother Yashoda was concerned about the fact that the gopis were upset by Krishna's stealing. So Nanda Maharaj had eight cows that were eating specially fragrant grasses. So she decided to get that milk and create sweets and condiments that were so tasty that he wouldn't want to steal them from anybody else. So when she was breastfeeding Krishna, the milk was boiling over, so she went to get the milk. So Krishna got upset and broke the yogurt pot. That's when Yashoda then chased him with a stick and he went running off, and eventually, you know, Mother Yashoda bound Krishna to the grinding mortar. So, you know, Krishna is unaffected and the controller of the material, unaffected by and the controller of the material world, yet he comes under the control of his devotees. So in one sense he is conquerable. He's the unconquerable, but he is conquerable by the love and affection of the devotees. He becomes bound up by that. So he's achievable, attainable by the devotees. Those who perform bhakti or devotional service can actually know Krishna. We can't know everything, but Prabhupada says we can't know everything about Krishna. Not possible, but we can know something about Krishna. Just in case, you know, any of us are trying to study the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavad Gita so that we know everything about Krishna, forget about it. Not possible. You can't know everything about Krishna because he's unknowable. You know something, Krishna reveals himself to the devotees by dint of their service. And of course, that's how we get out of the influence of the material energy. Mameva ye prapadjante mayamitam, by surrendering to Krishna and rendering devotional service. Devotional service is so powerful that it controls Krishna. It's so attractive that it controls Krishna karshati. Pure devotional service, that is. And this is one of the reasons why this section of the Bhagavatam emphasizes Krishna's position, because it talks about the demigods, but how people approach the demigods for material purposes. Why are they worshipping Kali, Prabhupada says? So they can eat meat, drink alcohol. Right? They go to the demigods for material purposes. So that kind of devotion is okay, I guess. But it is not the highest type of devotion. The highest type of devotion is that which is rendered to Krishna, ahoitiki apratihataya yatma supersidati. That which, this is mentioned earlier on in this chapter. The service or devotional service that attracts Krishna and satisfies the self is not materially motivated. This is one of the reasons why people don't approach Krishna, because if we, Prabhupada makes the point, we see Krishna's devotees generally they're impoverished, whether by choice or by design. The people are not attracted to that. But of course, most satisfying is that devotional service which is unmotivated, because that's the rare condition, but it's the natural condition of the soul, of the self, and which it's the perfection when one can engage in devotional service without motivation and without concern for one's material situation and without a desire for knowledge. Jnana kama karma anuritam, uncovered, not covered. Devotional service not covered by personal concerns, but for a concern for Krishna. That's very attractive. And of course it releases us from the bondage, from the covering of material, for the bewildering covering of the material energy, and helps us to then appreciate, or it reveals to us, the transcendental or the spiritual condition. Krishna is not controlled by the material energy. He is the controller of the material energy. But even though he's the supreme controller, still actually he can be subdued, if you like, or he comes under the influence of his devotees who perform devotional service, but purely motivated. And we see that in the childhood pastimes of Krishna. Nanda Maharaj says, please get me my shoes. So he goes and gets his shoes. Or when Mother Yashoda gets angry and chases him with a stick, then he gets scared and runs off. We can see the importance of the devotees in the Damodar Leela, which I've just been reading recently, where Nalakuvara and Manigriva, who are effectively rascals, right? They have no relationship with Krishna. They're drunkards, right? No connection. Nonsense. Drunk got no clothes on, standing around, you know, enjoying with young girls in the forest. That's just, you know, that's just mudha. Due to their opulence and their wealth, Prabhupada says, you know, opulence and wealth means intoxication, meat eating, gambling, illicit sex. So that's what they were doing. But then Narada Muni saw them. The pure devotee. And he had compassion for them. He saw their intoxicated state. And, you know, basically most people are in an intoxicated state. Even if they're not intoxicated, they're still intoxicated. They don't understand the difference between right and wrong and good and bad and proper and improper behaviour, cleanliness, uncleanliness. But Narada Muni cursed them to stand as trees. Okay, you want to stand around naked? And you don't know that being naked is the wrong thing to do. Okay, that's like a tree. A tree doesn't understand that it's naked. Animals don't understand that they haven't got any clothes on. Right? Whereas in a civilized society, one dresses appropriately, properly. And, you know, to cover the lower part of the body is proper behavior. You know, in modern society, it's expose yourself. Isn't it? Expose yourself. And it's exploited. Even, you know, even if you want to sell, you want to sell something and you put a naked woman next to it. That's how you sell things, with no clothes on. This is not proper behaviour. This is the behaviour of the animals, basically. But Narada Muni was concerned. Devotees are concerned. You're a mudha. Wake up to yourself. So he was thinking, okay, how can I awaken their natural devotional service, their natural position? So he thought, if you take away the wealth of a wealthy man and make him poverty stricken, then he'll make spiritual advancement very quickly. Turn him into a pauper. Because then he's suffering. And the, you know, people who are suffering, people who are poor, they generally also feel for the, they feel for others. They certainly feel for themselves. Right? Ouch, that hurts. So, he cursed them to take birth as trees for 100 years of the demigods, which is, Prabhupada says, 6 months. Our 6 months is 1 day of the demigods. So I calculated how, that's 18,250 years they stood as trees. It's quite a long time when you think about it. And they were blessed that they were cursed, that they would remember why they were cursed. They would remember their position, their situation. So Krishna was tied up. My mother Yashoda, but he knew of the curse of Narada Muni. He knew that. And so, even though he had no relationship, well, ultimately everybody has a relationship with Krishna, but he had no immediate relationship with Nalakuvara and Manigriva, but because Narada Muni wanted to liberate them, then he pulled the mortar and the, you know, he empowered the mortar and the rope to pull down these 18,250-year-old trees. So you imagine they're pretty solid, substantial trees. If a tree's been living for that long, it must be pretty big. And again, we can see the importance of the devotees to Krishna, such that because Narada Muni desired the welfare of these fellows, rascals, then Krishna also acted on behalf of his devotee. This is why we value and respect the devotees, because the devotees give us an opportunity to get out of the material world, out of the influence of the material energy, and place us or put us under the protection of devotional service. And if we're fortunate, if we meet a pure devotee, then we can also get pure devotional service from them. This is the importance. So even though Krishna is the controller, he's transcendental, not ever under the influence of the material energy. He still comes under the influence of his internal power, and he comes under the influence of his devotees, who are also directed or under the control of the internal energy, the spiritual potency, actually under the influence of bhakti. And when Krishna liberated Manigriva Nalakuvera, he was smiling afterwards, because he was thinking, here I am, I'm tied up, I'm bound up, but I'm able to liberate them. And they were offering their prayers, you know, you were Krishna, Krishna, Mahayogim, you know, you're the supreme yogi, this, that, and the other thing. And he actually was a little bewildered by the praises of the two demigods. He actually prefers being told off by his mum. He prefers the chastisement of his mother, the scolding words of his mother, to the praises of the demigods. Coming under the influence of the internal or the spiritual potency. So even though Krishna's pastimes appear to be, you know, ordinary or human like, actually they're not. So even though it appears as if Krishna is under the control of the material energy, actually he's not. His activities here, Bhagavan Atma Mayaya, all of his activities are performed under the influence of the spiritual or the internal supreme potency, the spiritual potency, not the material potency. The material energy is always under Krishna's control. He is never influenced by the material energy. Rather, he is under the influence of his own internal yoga maya, or here the word is atma maya, by his personal potency. So does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points? Yes, Ramaji.
You mentioned Krishna is naughty a few times in your lecture.
He is naughty,
so
yes.
So interesting that he is naughty, but he addresses his naughty tricks.
What's that?
He throws the stones,
yes,
the pots,
yes,
clay pots,
yep,
break them.
Mm.
And those gopis are actually rishis and munis in their past lives.
Yeah.
And we play with past time.
Yes.
So they're more interesting. attractive.
Yes, very attractive. Gopi Janavallabha, that's what it refers to. Gopi Janavallabha refers to those childhood pastimes of Krishna. Very attractive. Because, you know, he's a baby. Even killing Putana and Trinavata, he's just a baby, yet effortlessly, practically speaking, he kills the demons. In other pastimes, he has to exert a bit of effort. To kill Hiranyakashipu, he has to be in a Sringadev, get angry, assume this huge form to fight with Hiranyakashipu, with Putana, just as a baby, pop, finished. So very attractive. That, you know, he's just a baby, yet still he's supremely powerful. Trinavarta, you know, Krishna's just a baby, but he hangs onto his neck so tightly that he realizes I'm finished and becomes so heavy. But he doesn't manifest, you know, it's all done in this form of a baby. Anything else? Okay, Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktavinoda ki jai.